From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 8th day of June, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes and Greg Johnson. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner and hear about an article from the FarmDoc website, a quarterly survey on consumer sentiment as it's related to food and agricultural policy. Also, let me take a moment to apologize. Yesterday, I was traveling in Western Illinois and miscalculated the availability of internet and whether or not I could supply a program back to the station here on Urbana's campus. That was not the case.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day at $7.64.5, up 7.5 cents. December at 7.17¾, 3¾ higher. And July soybeans, 11¾ higher at $17.40 even. November new crop at $15.68 a bushel, up 18¼ cents. Bean meal down $1.80. The bean oil $1.50 higher. Soft red winter wheat up 3 cents at $10.74¾. And the hard red July at $11.55, 5¾ cents higher on the afternoon. Livestock in the live cattle futures, the finish at $137.52 was up $3.40. The feeder cattle at $175.65, $3.20 higher. And lean hogs down $1.32.5, finished at $107.95. Crude oil at $122.73 a barrel, $3.30 higher. Gasoline on the wholesale price, the RBOB at $4.24 a gallon, 0.8 cents higher for the day. Jackie Vakes from TotalFarmMarketing.com now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Jackie. Thanks for being with us. A lot of ground to cover today. Support and resistance for me first, please.
Alrighty. July, 707, 824. September, 685, 779. December, 715 and 766. Beans, July, 1741, 1866. August, 1514, 1692. November, 1555 and 1723. For June gold, 1845 and 2082. Dow Jones, same as last week, 31,532, 36,952. U.S. dollar, also same as last week, 99.5, 102.98.
What do you think about exports and their situation?
Well, we ended the wheat year down 21. So now we're going to be into the new marketing year, and hopefully that'll go a little bit better. We don't know. Corn, 17% behind, just like last week, and beans, 12% behind compared to 13 last week. So beans have made a bit of a move. Interesting little tidbit here. We saw, you and I have been talking a little bit about when you look at inspections, you know, that this doesn't reflect anything that gets real, you know, because we wait for census inspections to come out. April census showed much higher numbers than inspections, and corn was as much as 200 million bushels higher. So we might see exports actually raised on Friday's report. It'll be interesting. Beans were also higher than what they thought they were. So when we look at inspections, we have to be very careful to keep it in mind that these are accurate numbers for what goes out of the ports on ships, but these are not numbers that reflect everything that's being moved within the countryside.
What else have you been watching? USDA report, as you mentioned, is due out Friday.
The big part of the USDA report that I'm going to really be looking at is what are they going to do on wheat? You know, with the Ukrainian war situation, Canadian European crops having issues. The buyers for the Canadian and European crops are pretty short. They've been scrambling. Some of them paid huge money last week to be able to try and secure. In a lot of those countries, like India, they actually have minimums as far as what they can secure. And they also said that China's trying to secure an additional 30% of wheat. So that tells you that they're concerned too. So as far as the USDA report goes, Todd, I've got some of the estimates. Crop production, just a little bit less than what we had last month at 14,442,000. Yield still at 177. Soybean production also down just a hair. Now these are average guesses. 4,638,000 with the average yield at 51.5. All pretty close to unchanged when you come right down to it. When you look at the carryouts for this year, 1.438 billion for corn, very close. Beans, 217 compared to 235 last month. Wheat, 661 compared to 655. Also, very negligible changes. Now, when you look at 22-23, carry out on corn, 1.337. Beans, 295 compared to 310. And wheat, 622 compared to 619. Also, not a lot of, nothing real big. Let's just put it that way. If you look at the world numbers, kind of follow right with it. The corn number is down slightly. The bean number is down slightly. And the wheat number is down slightly at the world levels for this year. And for next year, pretty much unchanged. And so as we get into Brazil, this is another area that we're watching close. Corn, 114.6 million metric tons compared to 116 last month. That's for corn. 124.8 compared to 125. And CONAB just put out their report today. They said soybeans 124.2, so we're not too far off. And corn 115.5, so they're just slightly higher. Argentina 52.2 for corn compared to 53, so slightly lower. Beans stayed the same at 42. All wheat is looking at 1.7 billion, and 1.1 billion of that is winter wheat, and then you get the hard red at 5.8, soft red at 3.57, and white wheat at 2.3. So kind of interesting stuff going on here. That wheat crop, wheat can be the leader a lot of times.
This week's crop progress report from the United States Department of Agriculture included the first assessment or crop conditions portion for corn. Did you get any numbers from Dr. Cordonier on those?
Yeah, you know, over the years we've been following. He always has weeks in the top five and weeks in the bottom five in terms of states. And so the top five this week are Illinois, Iowa, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Kentucky. And the bottom five are Texas, Colorado, Minnesota, Kansas, and North Dakota. I expected South Dakota to be in there, but it wasn't. And so we'll keep that up. And once we start to get bean numbers, I'll be getting those also at the same time. But it's been very interesting over the years doing this, because it really does give you a feel for what's going on in all the different parts of the country. And that's what we really have to focus on. I mean, we grow grain everywhere, and so we have to be in tune with what's happening everywhere. I can tell you the corn that I've seen, a lot of that corn looks pretty darn good. I mean, it's pretty amazing. We were by my folks this weekend and coming back, and it's just amazing how much the corn has grown. I mean, in Wisconsin, I bet you that, you know, we always go knee-high by the 4th of July, you know, because we're always behind Illinois and everybody else. But I think it could make it this year, and that would be a surprise.
Anything else that we need to discuss for the day?
Well, I just want to hit a couple high spots on Brazil and Argentina. You know, since that Safrina corn didn't get hit by the frost so hard a couple weeks ago, that production number actually is coming in higher from down there. And it's primarily because all of a sudden they're finding more acres, more hectares. So I guess the big question will come down to, can the added acres make up for the damage that was done? They're going to actually import record amounts of corn from Paraguay in 2022. And that, to me, you know, the livestock producers usually import corn from central Brazil. And that tells me that central Brazil has certainly had some big problems this year. So we'll have to see. Once the last 2 years, actually, it's been very tough in central Brazil. They're also really worried about running out of diesel fuel down there. So they're talking about kicking up their from 10% to 15% biodiesel usage. And what's interesting down there is biodiesel is more expensive than diesel fuel. And so it's actually going to raise the price. But if they don't do it, they believe that they're going to be out. They only have a 38-day supply of diesel fuel in the entire country right now. And that's a tough situation. Argentina, just a little bit on them. They have been harvesting corn. They're 94% done, I believe, and they're at 109 bushels on some of the acres, 62 bushels on other parts of the acres, and 137 on some of the other parts of the acres. So it's really all over the place is what it is. And so, and they're not 94% done on corn. I'm sorry, it's 93.4% done on soybeans. They normally are about 95% done at this time of year.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That is Jackie Vakes. She is with Total Farm Marketing. Over the coming weeks, we'll report on some interesting survey results from the Gardner Policy Series here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Brenna Ellison, who was a member of the Department of Agricultural Economics on this campus, is now at Purdue University, but still involved in this quarterly survey. I asked her to tell me a little bit about it and what their hopes were for the survey.
So the Gardner Food and Ag Policy Survey is a new survey project we have where we're running a quarterly survey with approximately 1,000 U.S. consumers. It's designed to be a national survey that is representative of the U.S. population in terms of gender, age, income, and pretty close on geographic region. And the purpose of the survey is to really think about food and agricultural policies and how that the average taxpayer feels about them. So oftentimes when we think about policy, we think about it from the farmer's perspective in terms of who's impacted, who benefits, maybe who loses. But we don't really ever think about how taxpayers feel about policy. And in reality, they're an important stakeholder because at least in part, they help, you know, fund policies and they elect the people who design policies. So again, the goal of the survey is to, understand how taxpayers feel about different policy issues.
There are a series of questions that will be asked each time on two different topic levels, and then ad hoc questions will be asked every quarter as well. Let's start with this first quarter. Discuss some of the questions and some of the answers that you got back. Begin with the beliefs about the food system. What did you ask and what did consumers say?
Sure. So one of the main things that we want to track over time is how people feel about the food system, what they believe about it. And in terms of the types of beliefs that we're asking about, we want to know what they think about the overall food system. Like, does it produce food that's sustainable, safe, tastes good, healthy, affordable, accessible, and then something that provides healthy returns to different supply chain actors, such as farmers, grocery stores, food manufacturers, and so on. And we measured that on a agree-disagree sort of scale. And so we found that overall, about 82% of consumers believe that our food system produces food that's tasty, followed by 75% who believe it is accessible and 74% who believe it's safe to eat. And then things that maybe they agreed less on were currently, which is not surprising due to inflation, about 59% agreed that the food system produces food that's affordable, and only 57% agreed that the food system produces food in a sustainable manner.
The other set of questions that you'll ask the survey respondents each quarter pertains to how much they trust each section or segment of the supply chain.
Sure. We also asked about trust in different food system actors. So we looked at five different actors in terms of if we think about our food system. We asked about government, restaurants, grocery stores, food manufacturers, and farmers. And we measure trust on a 7-point scale. So an answer of 1 would mean you do not trust that actor at all. And an answer of 7 would mean that you trust them very much. And our results so far show that people have really high trust in farmers, which is consistent with, you know, previous research. In general, farmers are a group that consumers hold in high regard. They had an average score of 5.6 out of 7. After that, we saw consumers have the most trust in grocery stores at a 5 out of 7. And if we look at the other end of trust, the actor that consumers had perhaps the least trust in was the government with a score of 3.6 out of 7.
What are your hopes that this will help to do as it relates to food policy in Washington, D.C. and with the 2023 Farm Bill coming up?
Right. So, you know, our hope is just to kind of understand where taxpayers are at and maybe what gaps they see in the food system. So if we continue to track and given current inflation, right, for example, if we keep seeing that people are concerned about the affordability of food, that would be a good thing to tell policymakers in hopes that, you know, maybe there are some modifications we can do with policies to help increase affordability of food. You could also think about accessibility, which is something that's gotten a lot of attention from policymakers. And so, you know, if we see accessibility trending in a negative direction, you might be, we could have the ability to do follow-up questions and try to understand why consumers think that. Is this, you know, it's just hard to access any food, healthy food, those sorts of things. And so in those cases, the trending and what we see, either positive or negative, could help policymakers try to understand maybe where gaps are and where policy energy and dollars need to be spent.
That was Brenna Ellison. She's with the Department of Agricultural Economics at Purdue University, a former member of the Department of Agricultural Economics here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and working with the Gardner Food and Agricultural Policy Survey, which will be issued each and every quarter going forward. You can find the first in the series of reports on the FarmDoc Daily website right now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Time to check the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I heard you had a wild ride last night there.
Yes,
in that part of the world. So what happened?
Yeah, well, we had a line of storms come through here. And of course, at this time of the year, you run the risk of severe weather. And apparently we had a tornado aloft that evolved above our building. That's where it began, our business office. And I live about a quarter mile from the office, and it apparently passed over our house as well. But, you know, the good thing is there wasn't much damage to property other than trees. There was a lot of tree damage, but the house is still there, and we're still without power. But anyway, excitement. And, you know, meteorologists love this stuff. So, you know.
If you're storm chasing, it's one thing. If it's landing on you, it might be another.
You're right. We're counting blessings today, so that's good.
I take it didn't make it all the way to the ground either.
That's right. No, it did not. There's a lot of minor, I call it minor, it's probably not that minor, but there's a low amount of damage scattered across the southern part of the Kansas City metro area. From this single event. But no, to my knowledge, it never came all the way down. And I don't believe there's any widespread building damage.
Well, I'm glad you're okay and glad you're able to talk to us today. Tell me about the rest of the Corn Belt. What are conditions like?
Yeah, you know, it's that time of the year for the Corn Belt, too, in the sense that we are starting to see finally a shift towards summer-like weather, with ridge building showing up in the model data. And the ridge that has been offered by the various model runs recently have been sometimes rather impressive looking. I think the midday model run today was rather impressive, with a significant ridge in the middle of the U.S. And if any one of these, of course, verifies and we go into a stagnant weather pattern with the ridge around, we're going to be looking at hot and dry conditions for a while. But with that said, I think it's very important to keep it straight that we still have a very active jet stream. And by active, I mean that there's a lot of energy in it, and there's going to be a lot of weather systems that will come one right after the other that will attempt to break down any ridge of high pressure that attempts to develop. I think the southern parts of the Midwest, the Delta, and the Southern Plains, those areas are probably going to see some rather significant drying in the second week of the forecast. But areas farther to the north will still be encountering periods of rain and thunderstorm activity as these disturbances slam into the top of the ridge and kind of break it down periodically. So no big widespread issue for the moment with dryness, but it's only June. So we'll see what happens when we get down the road in July and August.
Well, what do you think we'll see for the next 7 to 10 days across a good portion of the Corn Belt then?
Well, the first week of this forecast is going to be well mixed. We're going to see rain and thunderstorms. We're going to have some periods of sunshine. The temperatures will be a little bit on the milder side of normal, but not too bad. So it's going to be a good mix. And when we get to the end of the seventh day, we're probably going to have soil moisture at similar levels that we have today, which is really quite favorable for a big part of the Midwest. There are some areas that are too wet in the north. There's some areas that are drying out. Indiana and parts of east central Illinois kind of got a little drier here recently, but subsoil moisture is still good. Now, in the second week, when we go out to days 8 through 14, we will see a drying tendency, but we've got enough moisture in the soil that the drier bias will likely be welcomed, especially in those wetter areas. But more importantly, the warmer temperatures will help to stimulate much more aggressive crop development. So I think the next 10 days to 2 weeks are going to be basically very good for most of the Midwest. We will firm up the soil a little bit in some areas as we go through that second week in particular. And that may add some pressure for the third and fourth weeks of our forecast. But I think over the 2 weeks coming up, it's going to be very, very good.
Hey, thank you.
You bet.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Let's take a look at the cash grain market on this Wednesday afternoon with Greg Johnson. He is with TGM Total Grain Marketing from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us. How's the trade been this week there at the offices at TGM?
It's been very slow with the 50-cent sell-off in corn last week and the 30-cent sell-off in beans last week. Even though we've rallied and gained some of that back, most of it back this week, we're still not back to the levels that we were just a week ago. And so farmers are not pulling the trigger. They're waiting for either the price to get better or for the crop to develop a little bit further so that they feel a little bit more confident that they will have something to sell. But until that happens, it has been very quiet here, both corn and beans, from a farmer point of view.
Has basis just generally been floating along with futures contracts, or has it widened or narrowed?
Basis has improved, actually, quite a bit. There's been some export business done, rumors that China was in for both corn and soybeans. We've seen corn basis improve probably 10 cents this week, and the soybean basis has improved about 20 cents this week. So trying to get some farmer movement or elevator movement to satisfy this demand, and the board didn't do it last week, so the basis is taking the lead so far.
I don't think farmers will move it. Have elevators decided to take advantage of it?
Yeah, the market has an inverse. If you look at the July prices versus this fall's prices, there's a pretty good inverse in the market. So the market is saying to the elevators, you don't have to necessarily move it here in June, but by the end of July or August, you better have it moved. Otherwise, you're going to take a pretty good discount for holding old corn and old beans into the new crop. So, yeah, I think the elevators are looking to move grain. Now it's just a question of whether they can find the rail or the trucks to get the grain physically moved. That's going to be the logistics challenge, I think, in the next several months.
I drove from here in Champaign County to Fulton County over on the Illinois line south of Peoria yesterday. The crops look incredible from here to there. Are you hearing that throughout the whole of your draw area?
Around here we are, yes. As you get further south, they've actually had a lot more rain. Effingham area, for example, had 4 inches of rain over the last 7 or 8 days. There's some replant going on and some crops that haven't been planted for the first time, but I think that's a relatively small area. If you look at the statewide numbers, Illinois, Iowa is in very, very good shape. It's early. I mean, the crop usually does look good when it first comes out of the ground, so those crop ratings will take on more importance as we get into July, but we're certainly off to a good start. We'd rather be off to a good start than a poor start, that's for sure.
Indeed. Hey, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand whenever you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. The theme music for our program today was written and performed by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.